This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 222 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com. And regretfully, I have to say, I had some technical issues with my recording equipment when Glyn and I recorded last night. As a result of that, we got the majority of the recording, but the first 10 minutes of it is absolutely unsalvageable for reasons I won't go into. It's just technical stuff. So as a result, what I'm going to have to do is just crash into the recording that we made roughly 10 minutes into the podcast, and I am sorry that you missed out on the first 10 minutes of hilarity, but as you know, it's very rarely anything to do with the podcast in general. It's just crazy chit-chat. So here we go. We'll just sort of launch into the part where we actually started to get into photographic-related content. And my apologies once again. Here we go. Should we get on with this podcast?
We were talking photography, at least.
Were we?
You semi-naked on this patch. There was a photo.
Man, I don't know what's worse, that idea or the stuff that Dave Clark's been knocking up down there in Tasmania.
God, gee, I tell you what.
If you are listening to this and you have not yet liked the ShutterSync podcast Facebook page, do yourself a favour, if only to see the photos that Dave Clark has been putting out on the wall.
I'll just pop in there and like that page myself, actually. It's a good idea.
Thanks, mate. So anyway, through the week, I had a couple of emails from Richard Annable. Actually, one of these came in only hours before we recorded the last episode, and I didn't get to copy it into my sheet of notes as I'm recording prior to recording, and that's why I didn't get to mention this in last week's episode. The first email that Richard sent me was regarding sorting through a large shoot, and it was a link to Chase Jarvis's blog again, and it's a guest blogger blogging on Chase's blog with his approach to sorting through a massive shoot, and he does a much better job of explaining it than I did, so I'll put that link in the show notes. Richard's second email was regarding the whole Creative Cloud furor, which seems to have just lit up the interwebs in the whole of the last week.
The nerds are going crazy.
Oh, they are. And Richard said, I stopped using a pirated copy of Adobe CS software as soon as the option to subscribe came about. It's more affordable for me to pay a small amount every month than to fork out for the complete version. Plus, you get upgrades as soon as they're developed and tested, as opposed to waiting for the next version.
And you're not scared about the knock on the door.
Yeah, well, that too. So thanks for your comments, Richard, because it's good to hear that side of the argument. Everyone else, I've read.
No, that was a friend of Richard Annable's who said he'd been using pirate.
Yeah, of course it
Richard
was.
Richard was passing that on.
He was. But everybody else has been going on about how the subscription model's the worst thing ever.
Of course,
and I must say I'm still on the fence. I'm still not entirely sure where I stand on this issue, but hey, it's Adobe's business. It's how they run their business is up to them.
People like to buy something.
They do, yeah, absolutely.
They're not just going to go and buy a product and revel in it for a while. They don't want to keep paying and paying and paying and paying, because you get the joy of buying once, but if you get to buy it multiple times, the joy wears off very quickly.
Yeah.
So that's the amateur's perspective. The pro's perspective is just another part of doing business.
Yeah.
It's just another monthly cost. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But to the amateur who's going out buying it for their own pleasure, well, they've kind of lost that pleasure.
Well, there was a pro photographer's blog who I read the post on today, and he said exactly that he feels that Adobe
must be
will,
a very smart man.
That Adobe will lose a lot of their casual users, the people who would use it once in a blue moon. They won't pay to have it all the time. And his other major gripe about the whole subscription model is, what happens if you stop paying for it? Then you lose the ability to access work that you did years and years and years and years and years ago. And he said, as a professional photographer, there have been times where I've skipped an upgrade version because the things that came out in the new version weren't applicable to me, so I was quite happy to stay with my old version of Photoshop. But then maybe two or three versions down the track, something would come out that I'd go, that's worth paying for.
Yeah.
And I would upgrade. And he said, the thing is, when you own the product, Adobe was never going to be able to come back to me and take my old version of Photoshop away from me. He said, but with the subscription model, the moment I stop paying, I lose my ability to use the software that I've already been paying for to access old content that I've created.
Is that actually true? I mean, or will he be able to just not be able to keep upgrading it? Will it be the same?
Well, I don't know. I'd love to hear from anyone who's already signed up to Creative Cloud on that issue. Like, if you stop paying your subscription, because we have heard ad infinitum that the software will phone home every month to re-verify itself. So what happens if you stop paying? Do you just stop getting upgrades, or does the software actually cease to function?
Yeah, you think about it, if you only subscribe, you have 1 month, you get free Adobe Photoshop, then you stop subscribing, and you've got it for $29 or whatever it is.
Yeah, they're not going to let you do that.
And then you wait until the next version comes out, you do the same thing again, so it's not going to work, is it?
No.
Interesting indeed.
Very. We also got a couple of emails from Carl Hemmings.
Yes.
And he...
Wasn't that lovely of him?
Of course.
Lovely. We love getting readers' emails.
Love hearing emails from our listeners.
Awesome. Especially those nice ones that say, gee, that's really good to see us. A few more of those folks would not go astray, you know?
Absolutely.
Bruce has got a very fragile ego app.
So Carl's first email said, hi Bruce and Glenn, thought you might like to see how Scott Kelby organises his photo shoot using collections and using the pick and reject buttons. I did some screen captures of the ebook Adobe Photoshop Lightroom 4 book for digital photographers that I bought at Peach Pit Press. Sorry about the order on the page, that's how they self-arranged when I attached the files. You'll have to follow the numbered steps to make sense of it all. P.S. Hope you get some killer shots of the rocks and light show. So Carl had sent me all these screen captures of the 23-odd pages of this ebook outlining this particular workflow. And again, it did a better job of explaining it than I did a couple of weeks ago. So. But I'm not going to put those in the show notes because that would be piracy, and we're not going to do that.
No.
But there was a great... his second email was from Smug Mug, and this was a great tip. Someone posted this in the comments of this Smug Mug thread, and it was to do with using Lightroom to do the pick and reject thing that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago, where you use the P button... to flag an image as a pick, or the X button to flag an image as a rejected image. And someone put in the comments, I'd like to add that when you hit the right arrow to move to the next image, he discovered accidentally that if you set your caps lock to on while you're doing your P and X for pick and reject, that Lightroom 4 will place the P or the X on that particular image, so flag it as either a pick or a reject, and it will automatically advance you to the next image. If the caps lock button is off, it'll just leave you on the image that you've just flagged. But if you have the caps lock button on, it'll automatically advance you to the next image. So you can just go P, P, X, X, P, X, P, 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 X, and not have to, click to move forward one image at a time. So that's a handy little tip.
What's this? Why would you reject an image, though?
Well, basically what these guys are saying
is... I don't understand. I star rate mine, 5 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars, 4 stars, 5, and all the way through, and keep work on the fives, and if I have to, I'll settle down for the fours. So why would you reject any of those? They're all awesome.
If every shot you take is awesome, then you needn't bother with this particular workflow, Glenn.
What, someone's taking bad photos? It's impossible. Look how great these cameras are these days.
Us are still on the journey, mate.
No. You just put the camera on P, it does it all for you.
P for pick.
P for professional. P for... You know, should have a 5-star and a 4-star and a 3-star button on the camera. And you just choose how good your photo would be. Oh, Mark, it's going to be a 5-star, I think. Yeah,
that's a great idea.
It makes things a lot easier, yeah, and then they're already sorted for you.
Oh, I love it.
In fact, you have 3 memory cards inside you. 6 memory cards inside your camera.
Yep.
Yeah. 2 for 5s, 2 for 4s, 2 for 3s. So you get a duplicate on each one. You take them out of the camera. You give your client the ones with all the 5s.
Yep. Yeah,
and you've got a card with the 5s yourself. You give a card with the 4s and a card with the 3s. You've both got a copy, and you go home. You're done.
That's so great. You need to submit that to Canon and get them on the case.
I think we should mock something up. Sure. <no. laughs> I don't know why no one thought of that earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Something that I saw this in the last couple of days. This was on DP Review.
Who?
and Glenn will like this one, as will... Actually, I don't know what body you shoot with. What are you shooting with? I know you're a Canon...
Mine most of the time.
Thank you.
Well, the arms tend to hold. The body keeps the arms up. 5D-ish.
Ish. Right, okay. Well, this may or may not have...
Mark 3 doesn't really matter.
Okay, well... the guys at Magic Lantern, who do custom firmware for Canon, have managed to come up with a way to extract raw video data from the 5D Mark III.
I saw this.
Yeah. So for those of you who shoot Canon
and specifically shoot
video with a 5D Mark III, the beauty of using Magic Lantern's firmware is that you'll be able to get off a raw version of the video rather than what you normally get out of it, which is a highly compressed H.264 stream, which, you know, from the still side of things, it's like being able to get a raw image rather than just a JPEG.
Yeah.
So, I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone that wants to go and check that out.
For those into that sort of stuff, it sounds like a bit of a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ability to capture that sort of, I mean, goodness gracious, the amount of computer you'd need to be able to render that sort of stuff would be astounding, but, yeah.
Oh, I don't think it'd be that intense. I mean,
you think?
Yeah, you probably want, you know, 6 gigs of RAM minimum.
Oh, at least. Well, you think that what's a 5D Mark III's raw file is, what, 33 meg? Give or take, I don't know, I've never tried it, but something around there.
Yeah, but is it shooting it's not shooting the video at that resolution. The video's only 1920 by 1080. Right, which means that the raw video would be much the same as any raw video you were to get from a Handycam that shot full HD, in theory.
Yeah, okay.
Which, I mean, yeah, you're right, it does take a fair bit of grunt to process, but the beauty of having raw video is a lot more non-linear video editing software packages will be able to work with the raw video without having to unwrap it through, you know, some sort of proprietary software that comes with your Canon camera, which is what you would have to do to work with H.264 video, because it's so highly compressed, it's very difficult for most video editing software to work with that in that format. You usually have to unwrap it in some form in order to do something with it. With raw,
you lost me just a little bit in the middle there.
Oh, okay.
After and welcome from Melbourne on Skype as usual. Just after that,
right. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, I don't do video. I'm just
fair enough.
That iPhone does good video.
Hey, listen, while we're talking DP Review, there was also released today, you'll like this, the EF200-400 F4L lens.
That's been a long time coming.
With a 1.4 teleconverter built in.
It was announced a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's obviously taken that long to to make it viable. I think it's going to be in everyone's kit bag before long. I mean, it's not an overly expensive lens either, I'm told.
Yes, Warren Buffett.
It's, what, the lazy 12,000 euro or something?
Yeah, exactly.
That's euro, though. That's not real money. If it was in US dollars, I'd be concerned. But that euro stuff, no worry. It's like pesos or something, I think.
What I want to know, though, is for the teleconverter to be built in, how do you disable it?
Well, you flip a switch.
Right.
And I'd imagine it must move an element out of or up or out of the way or something like that.
Like going to the optometrist, just flick the little thingy out the top.
Yes, but exactly. That's, from my recent experience down the optometrist, that's exactly what they did, so it must be exactly what they're going to do here. So you have to be careful when you're not using the teleconverter because you do have some of your elements sticking out the top of the lens. Why does my lens always have dust inside it? Well, it does have some technical drawbacks. But look, that's going to be a seriously cool lens for sport and wildlife that you're going to... It's like having a 600mm lens in your bag as well as a good zoom as well, just to back it off.
Yeah, and I mean, you think, 600 F4 would go to what, 5.6?
5.6,
yeah. I mean, 600 at 5.6, wow.
That's very nice, isn't it? It's no 600 at F4, but that's a fixed lens.
But even so, I mean, 400 at F4 would be pretty sweet.
I'll still stick to the 120 to 300 sigma lens and put on a crop sensor camera. Yeah. Put on your little soap, put on my iPhone.
So gutted that is not available in a Sony mount.
I know. Dave Clark knows too.
Yeah.
But good things will come to those who change to Canons or Nikons.
Right. Thanks, mate.
That is disappointing, but I guess it's economy of scale, who's going to buy it, what's the actual reality market, but I think for the price of that lens, again, I think it'd be fools not to open it up to a lot more end users in your Pentaxes and Sonys. And
I mean, really, would it be that hard to create different mounts for a lens?
You wouldn't imagine, you just bash one off the end and glue another one on.
You'd think so.
A bit of electronics, surely it's about it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, Sigma make other lenses for Sony.
Exactly. Yeah, they make, make a huge range. So I don't see where the drama is, but as a few of the listeners may have let slip that I'm not the most technical minded of people. So it might be baffling my brain to figure out. It should be fairly easy to do, but what would I know? I'm an idiot. I'm just an idiot. So I come back from the olden days of Tamron lenses where, just to change cameras, you change the mount at the bottom, pop one off, pop the other one on. It made sense back in those days.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, back in the, what's called the Tamron Adaptal 2 series, you buy the lens and then change cameras, just $40 mount changes from Canon to Nikon to Olympus to whatever, Yashica, Contax, Leica.
Wow.
Even Pentax. That's back in the olden days of mid early 80s. But that's the way it used to be back in the old school.
Do you know what? I was going to say, I wonder why they stopped, but I guess the reason they would have stopped is because they could make more money if they just made each lens with.
Would they really?
Well.
They reduce production costs if they only had to make the lens once.
Well, you would think. Lots of it. You'd think so.
You know, if you're the only people doing it, as they were the only people ever doing it back in those days, you're sure the corner of the market these days.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of electronics and a lot of reasons behind it these days. As cameras entered the more of electronic era, they started to phase out. I mean, as soon as the autofocus cameras came out in the mid-80s, that was the end of a Tamron with their Adaptal system.
Yeah,
so as soon as the bodies had to talk to the lenses, that was the end of it.
Right, yeah.
But pre-autofocus days. Yeah.
Yeah.
There were some good days back in the early 80s, though.
There was a great comment from Richard Ingram on Facebook today.
Was there?
He put this on the post that was talking about episode 212. It was like 10 episodes ago or something.
Oh, anyway, strange, man.
He said, just catching up on some eps, you guys were talking about war photography. And yes. Where do you draw the line between photographing and helping?
Yeah.
Years ago, when I was at college, we had a guest lecturer come and talk about photojournalism. And a similar situation was discussed. A photojournalist turned up at a house to find a woman who had overdosed on her front porch. Her toddler daughter was screaming on the steps. The photographer took this image before calling for help. After hearing this, I made the decision to never put a photo or image before helping another human being. Which I thought makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Only in some situations.
Oh, jeez. You had to go there, didn't you?
You know what? Let me propose a
hypothetical scenario.
A hypothetical to you, Mr. Ingram. It's a dark, cold winter, and no, I won't go quite so dramatic. World War II. You're in Germany. You're taking photos. There's Hitler. Guy walks up behind him with a gun. About to blow his brains off. Do you stop him or take the photo?
You just ask him to wait while you change lenses.
Yeah. I'm going to stand back a bit if that's all right. But here's the thing. It's easy. Yeah, I understand a mother, a child, very emotive subjects.
Yep.
Yeah, dictator, you know, who's about, or a guy with an axe who's about to attack somebody. Do you take a photo of the person who's about to jump on the guy? Oh, I don't know. There's a million scenarios where you'd probably act differently, you know?
Right.
So I always say with any of that sort of stuff, I try not to ever make a judgment. Not saying he is, that's what he says is perfectly valid in the same situation. I'd do exactly the same thing he would.
Yeah.
But I could never say what I would do in a situation until I was in it.
Oh, definitely.
And you know, stuff happens so fast anyway, you know?
Yeah.
I have absolutely or almost borderline no first aid skills, as an example.
Right.
But the amount of fatal car crashes I've assisted at or been in there as people are dying, as people are, you know, in a horrendous, because I'm the first, but as cars go past.
It's because you caused the accidents, wasn't it?
Well, that witch in the front seat of the car. I got to get them out somehow. No, but I mean, I'll be the first. I'm the first person out of a car to try and help, even though I've got no real ability to help, you know? So you never know what you're going to do in a situation until you're in the situation. It's very tough, you know. And I think everyone's got to follow their own judgment. And that guy at that stage, at that moment, he did that. He followed his instinct more than his judgment, or who knows. And it took a second to take the photograph. Would it have changed anything if he didn't?
Well, that's a good point too.
He wasn't like just setting up lights.
Yeah.
Oh, can you cry towards that light there? That'd be lovely. Fantastic. Yeah, can you drag your just, teddy by one arm along the dirty veranda there? That'd be fantastic.
Just move that softbox in again. And by the way, where is the catering van? They should be here by now.
Where's the fan? Someone fire up the generator. Yeah, exactly. That's how complex the shoot you want to make, you know? Yeah. If you're just setting up one off-camera flash, it doesn't take that long. But yeah, it's similar to dilemmas. I know people, yeah, we love to theorise on all the time. And you know, I'm very fortunate. I've never been in that sort of situation, have to make that photographic life or death situation.
Yeah.
I was once shooting a fire, and the fireman came up and said, "Put your camera down, mate," and grabbed his hose, and he maybe saved someone's house.
Wow.
Their back fence was on fire, and he gave me the fire. He said, "Look, we need all hands we can work that fire there." So I did.
Wow.
You know, that was this. Mind you, I got the photos in first. Because I've already been shooting. You know, I didn't have a hose.
You only need one hot hand to hold the hose and one hand to hold your camera.
Back the days of film, so you do like manly wine. Manly. I know, otherwise.
How inconsiderate.
Yeah. No. So I saved somebody's house, which was kind of cool, but yeah. Lost the shots. It's always this whole photojournalism thing is a tricky, because I know a couple of guys who do this sort of stuff in Iraq and Afghanistan, this sort of stuff, and how do you make value calls all the time? And that's why, if we go back to one of our first episodes, the TV documentary series Witness,
yep,
which was following these photojournalists around looking at some of the decisions they had to make. It was fascinating watching.
Yeah, as you said, until you were actually there on the ground in the heat of battle, you can't really say how you would respond.
Yeah.
And because there's, you know, there's so much that will have led up to that moment in time, you know, that exactly. will affect the decision you make, you know. Things that aren't necessarily obvious to an observer right at that critical moment. You know, there could have been things that happened in the minutes or even hours that led up to, you know, that particular moment.
I would imagine if you're a war photographer, you're suffering a certain amount of shell shock anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure how much of the reality of the world you're in actually still penetrates, you know. It's in a sort of a fugue state to some degree, and shooting is what you do, and shooting is what you're doing.
You mean in the sense that you could be desensitized? Is that what you mean?
Well, even if it's just moments, you know, you've had such an incredibly intense couple of days where you've just been under all sorts of pressure, and that leads you to be disassociative.
Right.
You know, you're not connecting with anything. It's no longer necessarily real. Yeah, it's like it happens to actual soldiers. I mean, they get, you know, post-traumatic stress. They get, you know, this disassociative state is very common.
Yeah.
You know, people say, "Oh, how could they ever go in there and shoot children?" I said, "Well, yeah. Look at what they've been under for the last year, 2 years, whatever, and they're no longer the person you remember they were."
Hmm.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you're a full-time or, you know, you're in those sort of war zones a hell of a lot, or working in drug clinics, or working in, you know, homeless shelters, or, you know, anywhere where you're really dealing with a lot of extreme emotion.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure at some stage, you know, you look at nurses, just everyday nurses, they have a certain detachment.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine lost his wife, and his mum, and her mum was a nurse, and she didn't react as much as was expected.
Right. Yep.
Because she'd been dealing with that for 30 or 40 years, and her reaction to that situation was different than what ours, where it's far less frequent, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. But they're all the sort of things that go through in my mind when I think about, well, you know, what would you do in the situation?
Yeah.
And hopefully none of us will ever have to find out.
Yeah, absolutely. Something I also came across on DP Review this week, which will interest the Nikon users, was
the new Nikon lens.
No.
Oh.
No. Some free open source software, which you can run on, I think it was Android and iOS devices, which basically allows you to use your mobile phone as a remote shutter release for Nikon DSLRs.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's a bit outside my area of interest because I'm not a Nikon shooter, but I will put the link in the show notes for...
That's those. Right. In 20 or 30 years when Sony have something like that, you'll be able to...
You're a nasty, nasty man.
I try. I thought you were talking about the new Nikon 32mm 1.2.
I did see that as well. And thought, yeah, that'd be an interesting portrait lens.
Well, absolutely, on that little Nikon One, yeah, tiny camera, yeah, tiny lens, and
so
I can only
would
imagine.
Given that would be, I'm imagining the Nikon One is a fairly small sensor. It would be smaller than APS-C, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So that would make that 30 mil something like what? Maybe a 50 mil or an 80 mil?
86.
Oh, wow. So it'd be like having an 86 f1.2 on a DSLR.
Well, it gives you the look, as far as the out of focus and the depth of field look, of about 86
3.2. Oh, okay.
On a full frame camera.
Right.
Because, remembering
course,
the small
the aperture
sensor,
changes as well. Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's more the smaller the sensor, the less depth of field you get, or the more depth of field you get at any given aperture.
Yes.
So, so it opens to 1.2, but it looks like 3.2.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah,
which would be kind of good, and it certainly opens up a lot of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And as a travel camera, would be fantastic. You know, something you've always got in your briefcase as an example. You want to do some quick lunchtime portraits or something. Not a bad little piece of kit to have along. You know, going away on a business trip and you can't justify taking all your gear, but you want to pop one of those in.
And if I'm not mistaken, the Nikon One actually has a hot shoe, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, so you could do off-camera flash with it.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
That looks good. And that's slightly cheaper than the Canon 200 to 400 as well. It's it's only $900, so relative.
For that lens?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's relatively...
Yeah, that's more than you paid for the camera.
Yeah, but, you know, a Canon 85 1.2 is, what, no, $2,600 or something?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, amateur, you've got a Zeiss 85 1.4, haven't you?
No.
Oh, you'd like one, though, wouldn't you?
Nah, I don't know. I love my 135 2.8.
I tell you, I've used the 85 1.4 in your camera.
Yeah.
Oh.
Really?
It's a sweet piece of lens, it really is.
It's right.
Seriously gorgeous. But as you say, that 135 is pretty darn nice, too.
Yeah. That's a great portrait lens.
But that 85, silky smooth. It's beautiful.
Something that came out today, which I thought, it's not purely photographically related, but I thought it might be of interest to our listeners. Up until today, Google have given you 15 gigs of storage, but it was 10 gigs of mail and attachments and 5 gigs for Google Drive and Google Plus photos.
Yeah.
As of today, they've taken down the, you know, because really it's just an artificial wall between those lots of storage. And now, across Gmail, Google Drive, and Google Plus, your photo allowance for Google Plus, you now have 15 gigs in total. And you can use that 15 gigs however you like across those three properties. So, yeah, so I thought that was worth mentioning. Just
absolutely.
You know,
just for people who use those services frequently as well, it'd be nice to know.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe you don't use Gmail a hell of a lot and maybe you don't use Google Plus, but, you know, you like the idea of some cloud storage, you could just use Google Drive and have 15 gigs as a nice place to back up photos.
Just stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
nice.
Yeah.
I did a bit of looking into the orphan images thing this week as well.
Oh, yeah? What did you find?
Well, it's a blatant lie, really. I didn't.
But, okay.
I did stumble accidentally across a piece of information.
Right.
So I wasn't going to be looking into it, but that would sound really good if I had it. No, I found that Canada have been doing the same legislation.
Oh, okay.
Since 1990.
Right.
Since pre-digital days.
Wow.
So it's nothing really that new. It's just, you know, more the phrasing, the placement, the wording, the take into account. Yeah. So they've had the same process in place as far as the independent tribunal to review how much effort you put in trying to find the image, owner, and so on and so forth. And yeah, and their take is that they get used so infrequently because it's so much easier to find other images elsewhere. The work involved or the potential lawsuit if you didn't follow the process is still so big that it's just not worth it.
Right.
It'd have to be a unique image that someone needed badly that just was nothing else available like it to make the effort worthwhile, I would imagine.
Right.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Very interesting.
And last weekend, not the one just gone, but the one before, was the big photo show in LA.
Oh, yeah. Which you were meant to be going to.
I was meant to, but, you know, a little passport issue.
You still haven't put it in, have you?
Well, it was going to go in last week, but man flu strikes again. Oh, damn.
All
the paperwork's filled in now. The woman who I got to sign the wrong bit of paperwork, she's back and signed it all.
Right.
Oh, it's a saga. I might write a book about this. Yeah, the Passport Chronicles or something. so they had 94% of all people who registered actually showed up.
Wow.
And when they had over 17,400 or something people register, and almost 16,200 came through the door, which is a fantastic effort.
That's awesome.
Fantastic effort. And I've seen lots of photos of all the education sessions, and there's, you know, hundreds of people sitting and hundreds of people standing around the people sitting so the people sitting couldn't see. Also, it was like a rock concert, you know. It was all about photo, though. And you know the significant thing about the show?
What?
Was that neither Canon nor Nikon were there.
What?
Yeah, they had no interest.
So?
No interest in being involved in connecting with photographers, connecting with people passionate about the industry. They'd rather put on a trade show at CES and deal with the trade.
Right.
But not show up to a public event to talk to the public.
Wow. So were there other camera manufacturers in attendance?
Nope. Well, with the exception of one awesome company, Sony.
Wow.
And Sigma were the only lens company there.
So who was exhibiting then, if it wasn't...
All sorts of people showing up, you know, they do services of print on metal and all sorts of different things you could do with your photos were being displayed. There were stores there selling stuff. There was just, but it went for over 2 days, and all the reports I've had in, it was an astounding success. I'd love to know if there's anyone out there who went.
Yeah.
I'd love to get some feedback.
What
did you think about it? And because it's going to be an annual event now. And I'm super impressed in the fact that the show's name was the Big Photo Show. Now, if you weren't sure what that event's about, what do you think that event tell you? It's fairly succinct, really, don't you? It's a photo show, and it's big. I'll go to that. Oh, and it's free. Well, there we go. I'm going to go along. So the Big Photo Show. Fantastic. Yeah. In Australia, in their infinite wisdom... And I do a weekly photo industry newsletter for the trade and for the retailers for the Photo Marketing Association, which I'm heavily involved in.
Right.
And this week's editorial piece, because I'm the editor. Yep. This week's editorial piece was fairly blunt, and I thought I might just bring a few words from my wondrous editorial, if that'd be okay.
Go for it.
And the headline that this week's email was called "The Big Photo Show That Could." So compared to our two major shows this year, one in Sydney, which unfortunately shares its name with one of the US's major porn production companies. Sadly, the first few entries in Google when you search for the event, and one in Melbourne that prefers to use the ubiquitous word digital rather than photo.
Yeah.
My thermometer is digital. So is the clock on my microwave. Yep. I don't want to go to a show to see different versions of them. So what's in a name? Everything. We want to make it. We seem to want to make it hard for people to find us.
So
the big show I'm emceeing up in Sydney at the beginning of June, the Digital Playground. What does that mean?
Yep.
And of course the far bigger Melbourne show, the Digital Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Is this because they've merged with Cedia? And it's going to be sort of all-round digital entertainment and not only photography?
That's what they tried several years ago and have been trying for many years to get, but they never end up merging. They never got, they hadn't had a single person there showing audio-visual equipment of any note.
Right.
It's a photo show.
Right.
So if you come there, want to take photos and learn how to take photos and, the two big opportunities in Australia to promote photography and get people excited about photography. You would never even know they're about photography because it's not even in the name.
Yeah, right.
Absolute daftness. So I'm rather lucky that this year's Melbourne main conference, I'm the chairperson for a major industry panel with Nikon, Canon and Olympus and so on. So I'm going to throw a few of these questions at them. what the hell's that? Because they're the people who set the agenda. They're the ones who set the name. So I'm going to, and I've been given moderately free license to be controversial.
You're going to go and tear them a new one.
Which is always a bit dangerous. it's just sheer madness, Let's embrace photography and get people excited about taking photos and then learning how to take better photos and wanting to be involved and doing stuff and make photography fun, which is what it should be, Anyway, that's my bleat for the week. We should call that Glenn's Bleat of the Week. I know I kind of bleat all episode, but I could have like a special extra bleat.
So on Facebook at the moment, Evan Shu has piped up and said, "Just wanted to say hi and thanks. I'm enjoying the re-energized podcast. Cheers, guys."
It's all Bruce, guys. It's all Bruce. It's just a powerhouse.
Thanks, Evan. And Adam Davidson said, "On behalf of myself and Richard Annable, how many camera bags is too many? We all know you can never have enough."
Well, he's answered his own question, hasn't he? The man, I would say, if he actually had a job, I wouldn't say this, but he's redundant. how many's too many? You can never, you can never have enough. Well, you just, yeah, well, there you go, effectively.
Yep. Yeah.
But I agree. Yeah. It's like shopping for handbags. Not for my wife.
Yeah.
Like
women and shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And yeah, and a new, actually new bag. Because, you know, sometimes you only want to take, you know, yeah, two lenses, sometimes three and a flash, sometimes three, a flash and a converter. You need a bag for every possible connotation.
You do. Absolutely. I totally relate to that.
There's a lovely man that had Adam Davidson. No, I say that with all insincerity. No, I do.
No, he's a top guy.
No, with total insincerity, I say that. Absolutely.
Totally. Sorry, I missed it the first time.
That's not the cycle back and drop the crap joke.
Did you have anything else on your list?
You know, I've got this thing about this photographer who's giving, who did this big Facebook thing about a fairly well-known Victorian photographer who's given up the trade.
Okay.
Because of, you know, I think it's too big an issue just to, so we might save that one for next week, and we'll, I'll just talk a few thoughts through that.
Okay.
This is someone who says to be giving up because of how cheap people are pricing their work out there. And it sounds like a load of horse hockey to me, but
right.
We can discuss that next week.
Yeah, okay. So, well, the one final thing that I had on my list was a video of Chris Hadfield, and if you don't know the name yet, you probably will very soon. He is one of the guys who has just returned from the International Space Station. And the link...
The IST, thanks, dude.
Yeah. What?
The IST, the International Space Station. It's just, all the cool kids call it the IST.
They do?
Yeah, I'm trying to start a trend, dude. Back me up.
Okay. How to derail a thought. Anyway, so the link I'll put in the show notes is this video of Chris Hadfield explaining how or his approach to taking photographs of the Earth from the ISS, or the IST if you're Glenn. And it's just a really fun little video. It only goes for about 4 or 5 minutes. But just, yeah, well worth a look. Really cool. And he, you know, obviously because of where he was shooting from, he gets, you know, an aspect of the Earth that none of us get the opportunity to shoot. It was really cool to see the images he was getting and for him to talk through his approach to shooting them. So
nice.
Yeah,
we'll add one last thing for the viewers to pop onto our Facebook page once you've listened to this and click on the link for the Mirrorless Party, the video we're going to put up there.
Oh, okay.
It's an awesome, fun piece of thing from some friends of mine in the US who run a camera store over there, and definitely worth a gander. Very clever folk.
Cool. So, all right.
I think we'll enjoy it very much.
Well, I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I'll send you the link now, dude.
Beautiful. All right. So, I guess that's pretty much it for this week.
Well,
then.
As they used to say, if you're old as I am, the two Ronnies used to say, well, it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Exactly.
I used to love that show.
Oh, man. We're daggy folk. What can you do?
Yeah. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
And you too.
And I'll talk with you next week.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Shutterzing, another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzingpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzingpodcast.com.